Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Don't know what that is the music to, I'm so sorry.
Thank yourself.
I know, huh? But take yourself out of the room first. That is a John Barry Orchestra and the original theme from Dr. No, James Bond. James Bond.
Shaking that stir.
That's it. Hey, this is The Writer's Block. It's LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Jim Christina. We are in studio with Bob Brill.
Hey.
And, of course, the bookie herself, Jerry Christina.
Oh,
Bobby
thank
G.
You.
Bell
thank
is on the phone from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Bobby, you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, goody. And, of course, we have another guest on hold on another line. And he'll be with us in just a moment. But let's get this puppy started because we've got Henry going to be in here at 7:40, and tonight's guest is this is his third visit with us. So, great guest, and the guy's a terrific writer. Okay, you have typed your final period. You've stacked your last chapter. You sat back in your chair and you said to yourself, "I am done." Nope, not even close. Sure, you finish your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. Know what it takes? Bob Brill, you know what it takes.
Oh, yeah.
It takes editing and rewriting. It takes more editing and more rewriting.
And more rewriting and more editing.
And formatting, proofreading, and then more editing and more rewriting. And then if you're lucky, you can devise a cover and get some printed and have them in a box in your closet. And when Christmas time comes around, give them to your relatives. Okay, well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very small investment, we can do all of the above for you and get you the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing and help you get some dollars in your pockets as well. We are here for new writers that don't have the foggiest idea what they're doing. Having learned it, we can share and help you get a book of which you can be proud. So give us a call. The number you call is 805-795-3165. Or you can email at jchristina, that is the letter J, at TuscanyBayBooks.com, or rpaolinelli, P-A-L-O-L-I-N-E-L-L-I, at TuscanyBayBooks.com. And all you really need to do is to send us a manuscript and let us navigate the rest for you. And it's a pretty good deal. Okay. Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rockmount Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com, or you can go to www.scvoutwest.com. Enter code WB100, WB stands for Writer's Block, and receive $10 off your order. Or you can call them toll-free at 877-340-9378. And knowing the proprietors personally, I can say unequivocally, they're really nice folks.
But can you spell that?
I can. Actually, you know what? I was like a spelling bee killer.
No.
Way.
Really?
Yeah. I couldn't spell crap now.
Well.
It's K-R.
But can you spell it backwards? And, you know, Steve Harvey has a show.
It's P-A-R-C. Park.
Is it Steve Harvey? I think it's Steve. Well, anyway, so, one of the guys. Oh, no. It's Anyway, there's a show on TV where they get really smart kids, you know, and they come on, they compete against each other in teams. And one of the things they do is they have, they give them words and they have to spell them backwards. And they give them like 30 seconds to spell 12 words backwards. It's something ridiculous. And they all do it. It's just unbelievable. It's not just words like crap.
Yeah.
It's
P-A-R-C.
Yeah, P-A-R-C. But it's not even words like Bob. You know, but it's where it's like undistinguishable, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Well, Moorpark, you know, is a crap room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, I used to do my name backwards. You ever do that, Bobby?
No.
Write your name back. Well, my name spelled backwards is Semaj Trebmal Anitzerk.
And why would you want to do that?
I don't know.
Well, you know, it's like it's that phrase that. Spelled backwards and forwards means the same thing. It was what Adam said to Eve when he first met her.
Which is what?
Madam, I'm Adam.
Yeah, well, my girlfriend at the time, this was in high school, her name was Nell E. Sewell Nusreep.
You couldn't spell that one forward.
Okay. Short bio. Our guest tonight is a former professional pilot. He travels. His travels have taken him to over 40 countries and 5 continents. Still traveling, Philip Donnelly divides his time between Montana and the Pacific North. And, well, Montana is kind of the Pacific Northwest, isn't it?
No, it's upper Midwest. It's Great Plains, actually.
Okay. Well, it's Rocky Mountains.
Yeah. No,
one
it's
side.
Great Plains.
And the other side is
Technically,
Great Plains.
Technically, it's Great Plains. Yeah, the only reason I know that is I'm in a trivia league, and I came up a couple weeks ago. So.
Bob Brill's in the house. Okay. I had to do that, Bob. Anyway, he's the best-selling author of 8 novels, Category 5, Code Black, Zero Separation, Deadly Echoes, Aftershot, Shock, Pegasus Down, which I've read, Seconds to Midnight, which I've read, and Speed the Dawn. Speed the Dawn we would be talking about tonight.
Yep.
He's a protagonist, of course, is Donovan. What's his last name?
Nash.
Yes, Donovan
and,
Nash.
And his wife, Laura, and Montero, whom I'm absolutely enamored with. And Michael and Rick and all the guys that work for that particular, what's the name of the company? I'm going to ask Philip, what's the name of the company?
EcoWatch,
that's it. Anyway, please welcome to the Writer's Block for his number 3rd time on the block, Phil Donnelly.
Thank you, guys. Hey, it's good to be back. Always good to be back.
Oh, we love having you. God, we just get so much fun out of your books. I told you the other day that I love your characters, and you can't get rid of any of them.
I won't. I just keep adding to them.
Well, yeah.
Move one out, bring another one in.
I mean, occasionally kill one off.
Yes, like Buckley.
Yeah, like Buckley. That was the one.
But
he lives on his ship.
A fabulous research vessel. So he's still in the story.
He is.
And you know, when I killed him off, and it was hard to do, but it was right for the story, and you kind of have to go that way. That's when I formulated the plan to have a book that starred the ship that's named after him. So, so it wasn't quite so abrupt. You know, there was going to be something down the line to honor him a little bit more. So I was happy to do that with this book.
Well, the other night when we were talking, I told you that I'm really disappointed that you actually burn up the Monterey Peninsula.
Oh my goodness. What a shock.
I know, huh? I tore it all up.
Carmel, Monterey, even the harbor there. And oh my God, the museum and the aquarium, everything. Boom.
And out to Pacific Grove and
I know.
Oh my gosh.
I was so impressed.
In thriller writing, you know, it's go big or go home, right?
So
we're not going to have a little grass fire, and it was big. It was just going to be a big deal from the get go, and it hurt me too. I'm a golfer, and Pebble Beach is like holy ground.
Well, I have to tell you that I had not read any of your books until this one. And I'd be real honest with you. When we started out and a plane's going through a meteor shower and everybody's still trying to battle their way through, I thought to myself, what the crap is this? You know, and, I got into it, you know, and I realized, I said, okay, the guy's a pilot. There's, you know, and there's certain things you have to buy into. And I was kind of curious how you tackled that, you know, how you handled that. And was there anything that, you know, made you second guess that particular start?
No, you know, because I'm a professional pilot, that, you know, I know what works and what doesn't. And I do have to say that in my books, I try not to use much fiction. I mean, they're high fiction, but there's not a lot of really far out stuff. It's stuff that it's not that it can't happen, it just hasn't happened yet. And so when I wrote that scene, and all my books start out with a bang, and then we catch up a little bit later. But I want to grab the reader's attention right off the bat, and I thought little meteor dust pellets ripping through an airplane would be a good way to get people's attention.
Well, got mine.
And I've thought about that. I thought about that a lot. In all the transatlantic crossings I've made in the middle of the night, it's astounding when it's just pitch black out there how many meteorites you see at night.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
There's just as many during the day. So I didn't, I may question a few things I do. Usually it's the medical stuff I kind of slow down on and I have to get some help with. But all the aviation stuff is it's meticulously plotted out from my experiences, at least, you know, from flying intact airplanes around.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you that Laura's my hero, and she is, because the one scene where she's standing on the deck of the Buckley and the jets are coming by on the deck dumping napalm in Monterey, and the pilot looks out the canopy and she's standing there flipping him the bird. I thought, good she's, for you.
She's so brilliant. Yeah, she's so brilliant. Yeah. And I know I like to just make sure we're all talking about this book, Speed the Dawn, that
exactly.
It sounds like none of us could put down. Lauren, you know, that whole thing with the napalm, and you say there's not really a lot of fiction. You make a reference to Winston Churchill and World War II, and was it the Dresden?
Yes, the Dresden
taking
fire.
A note on
yeah,
that. The
yeah.
Dresden effect, was
yeah.
it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was fascinating. And I'm assuming that that was a real event that happened.
Yeah, that was the firebombing of Berlin in World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
the Dresden.
And it was the first time that the Army Air Force at the time had noticed or took note that they created what were fire tornadoes.
Right.
And so that is, and then it happened again in Tokyo when at the end of the war.
Right.
So, you know, these things, I expect my readers, I love to throw little historical things in there, and I expect my readers to Google it and they do, because I hear about it and they thank me because they learn stuff.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
it's there's always a little, I always find some little tidbits like that when I'm researching.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. I obviously can't imagine a fire so virulent that it's creating its own tornadoes. I mean, the Germans know all about it.
Well, even small fires create their own winds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we see that a lot in Southern California, let alone Northern California, which you destroyed. But
well, not all of it.
You know, when I look back, and like I said, I'm less familiar with your books than. And Jimmy and Bobby. And when I look back at something like when you create a character in a thriller who is doing what he's doing, and instead of having a bunch of girlfriends, he has a wife that is also part of that, it just piques my interest as to where that originally came from, and was there any second-guessing that in the course of the books?
You know, I started writing this series, and at the time, of course, as an unpublished rookie who's clueless, I didn't know it was going to even be published, let alone be a series 8 books later. So, but the Donovan Nash prototype, I guess, came about just, I needed him. He wasn't going to be a usual character. He's not a Navy SEAL. He's not a spy. He's a he's a philanthropist, basically, and he has connections with one of the greatest, you know, conservationists that in his world, you know, lived. And so that I liked. I liked that that was going to be the angle, and that we were going to be doing natural disasters and some espionage stuff, because I do, that's kind of a tip of the hat to Ludlum and that era of, sure, of spy books, sure, that I grew up on. And so it just kind of developed. And so, you know, we've done, this was forest fires, or you know, I guess we could call this a forest fire. And we've had volcanoes. We've had, the very first book was Category 5, which is where it all started. Code Black, that's the name of the second book, and that's the highest level of snow emergency at the Chicago O'Hare Airport. So it's been a real, it's been a real interesting ride for me, for sure. And that, I think the natural disaster theme is an extra character in the book, that that we all have some kind of a very primitive brain reaction to. You know, there are things out there that can kill us, and we can't do anything about them. And if you add that to the mix of all the other problems going on in the book, I think it makes for fun fiction.
Well, and you give us a whole bunch here. You give us the meteor shower, and that alone, because it attacks satellite and debris and things that are up there in the atmosphere. So that's bad enough. Then you give us a tsunami.
Yeah.
You know, and then
two
and
of
then
them.
You give us the fires. And I kept thinking, this is such a perfect example of an author who's saying, what if? And whether you ask yourself that question or not, as a reader, I'm thinking, okay, oh, yeah, well, then this will happen. Well, then this could happen. And there's that whole chain of events that each one of them is devastating, but you put them all together, and you know, how will mankind get out of this?
Well, yeah, it was just like, you know, and the reason I had to do that, and I had, and it was fun to do it, and I loved writing this book. It was fun. From the very first time I was ever in Montana, I saw a forest fire. I mean, I saw the flames advancing, and it was just terrifying. And so that kind of planted the seed for this book. But the what I didn't want, and what I needed to eliminate, was Donovan picking up a telephone and saying, "Hey, here I am at this intersection. Come get me."
Right, right, right.
So I needed to stop that. And you know, when you and I think that's an element of the book that you know, readers, I hope, catch that we're so reliant on our technologies that when we don't have it, we have to think in a completely different way.
Right.
And Donovan did, and it took all of their wherewithal to save themselves.
Right. Well, he and Shannon,
and I like that. She was introduced at the very end of Aftershock, which is the book that where Buck died.
Right.
And so I brought her back, and I liked her character. I thought she played the right amount of terrified, trying to be brave, which I think is what we would all hope to do.
Well, she turned out to be a little bit more brave than terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I have to tell this story before we get too far. Of course, when I researched this book, I was in Montana. I was in Missoula. I did some research in Pebble Beach. I rented a house in Pebble Beach for a couple of months.
Well, actually, you played golf in Pebble Beach. That's what you did.
That's
you can't do research.
that is research in Pebble Beach.
I told my accountant it was research, so that's what we call that. So, so I got to do some there, and then I went to, and then I can't really write on scene. I can do a bunch of research, but I can't really write that way. So I had to. So I went to Montana, and the National Forest Service Fire Lab is in Missoula, which is where I was. And so I called them up and I made an appointment to come and talk to one of their science gurus. And we sat and talked, and he gave me tons of information, and we talked about the fire tornadoes, and he gave me a lot of the science behind it. And then he looked at me and he says, "You want to go to the lab and make one?"
Oh,
and I'm like,
oh my
are
God.
Are you kidding? Of course.
10-year-old science project jumped up on your heart, huh?
I know. I'm like a ninth grader. I just can't wait to go play in the lab here. And it's just, we go off and you know, there's this two-story glass cylinder that's, I don't know, it's maybe 48 inches in diameter. And he puts a little fuel in the bottom of it and lights it. And it, you know, it's burning like a, kind of like a fireplace would. And then he turned on the fan. And this flame curled up and climbed that tube all the way up to the chimney top out the top. And I was just blown away. So that's a 20-foot tall fire tornado. I can't imagine, you know, a 300-foot tall one. So it's, I was properly impressed and was happy to have those characters in my book.
Well, you've done good. I mean, the fire is a character in your book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
The tsunami is a character in your book. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a character in your book.
Yeah, that's right. And they all are characters, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, how are you going to keep it from being a character, especially when a tsunami, you know, is so germane to the story, and it's such a big part of the story.
That brings up a question regarding personalities of nature, and that kind of piques my interest, too, as to when you're writing a thriller like that, and you are doing disaster after disaster, do you consciously try to give those disasters, so to speak, personalities and make them mean, make them less mean, or whatever?
You know, they become part of the, they become an adversary, and I think that's what makes them a character. The tsunami didn't last too long. I needed to, there had to be a big part of the meteor that didn't break apart, and I needed to wipe out some of the escape routes. So there's a method to my madness behind all of this, and I don't just greedily just grab every disaster that I can. But I needed, there's some plot devices that I needed, and that tsunami worked perfectly, and it helped evacuate the city, which I wanted, which, you know, I'm not out for a giant body count. So that, you know, the sirens go off, the tsunami comes, it only goes four blocks up. You know, it's not terrible. It's not like some of the ones we've seen footage of on TV.
Right.
But it did serve its purpose, and it would be very, you know, it doesn't take much for one of these disasters to snowball, and you know, and then there's a whole other science about urban fires and versus just forest fires with all the poisons and all the different fuel sources, and sometimes you can't fight those fires. So there was a lot of cool stuff that I learned, at least in this book, and that were just laying there for me to pick up and use those pieces. And if you introduce them with the right amount of drama and, you know, like I guess their grand entrance, you can pull the reader right in. And it's hard to shut the book and go to bed at certain parts in this book.
How long did it take you to write it?
You know, all told, it takes me 9 months to write a book. Uh-huh. That's kind of what goes on. I think about it. My brain never stops. And so I do about 3 months worth of proof of concept, research, and then I spend 3 months writing the rough draft. And then it goes off, and I spend another 3 weeks maybe going over the rough draft, and then I'm shot, and I have to send it off to my agent. She goes through it. It comes back to me. Then it goes to the publisher. And there are rounds and rounds of edits and whatnot, sure, that go on that from there. But it's pretty much, you know, it's the 9 months of the year that I'm not doing book tour is when I'm writing.
Ah, gotcha. So,
yeah.
Now, go ahead.
As I recall, Phil, you write usually in Montana, and you start on the next book in June. Is that true still? Is that where you are now, and are you currently working on the next book?
You know, I modified. I changed that up.
Oh, you did?
I know. It's just, I grew my hair out, and I grew a beard, and I love Montana.
You heard it here first,
Utah,
folks.
Right now.
And you're in Utah right now. Okay.
Yeah, he is in Utah.
That's... So, and I'm brainstorming. I'm brainstorming on the new book. I took a little time off this year, just a few months before I start the next one. And So, and I needed that. 6 books in 6 years was that's a lot.
It
I didn't really realize how draining it was.
Mm-hmm. We were talking.
So I took a little break. So I'm in Utah, and I'll be in Montana in September.
Ah, you know what? We're going to do a real quick commercial, and then we're going to be right back to you. And of course, don't go away. And Bobby Jean,
okay,
don't you go away.
I'm here.
Okay. Then. And this course is going to be for you know who, your little buddy. Okay, here we go. You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but what about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when he can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside among orange trees and grass in a country-like setting. Your dogs get to be, your dogs get to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. Give All Dogs Rule a call at 805-524-1100 or visit them on the web at alldogsrule.com. When your pup returns home with that smile on his face, it'll leave you wondering whose vacation was better. Well, the dog. Come on. Let's get real. Anyway, All Dogs Rule, Fillmore, California. 805-524-1100. And that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Okay, it is now 7:25. We are on the phone with Phil Donnelly and a writer of his latest book, which is terrific. It's called Speed the Dawn, and there's a reason this title got the way it is, and we'll get into that in just a second. It is now 7:26, and if you want to call and talk to Phil, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929, and you come right in the studio, you get to talk to Phil and Bob and Jerry and me and Bobby and whoever else we can jam in here. So
the ghosts of Writer's Past.
The ghosts of Writer's Past. So anyway, my question to you, Phil, was going to be, the other night when we were talking about spin-off books. I know you're old right now, so I don't know if you remember the conversation. Did you need me to remind it to you?
No, I do remember that. I don't remember what I had for breakfast, but I can remember that.
And the conversation we had was that a character usually tells you, as you're writing them, that they're ready to spin off and be their own story. And do you find that to be true?
I think, after 8 books, I can promise you that the characters have gone in directions that I'd really, if I were to go back and look at the original outline, they've gone in different directions. And I think that's a sign that the storytelling is working.
Yes.
That I think the author has to be open to following sometimes instead of leading. And one character in particular is Montero. She just goes by the name Montero.
Right.
And yes, so, yes, yes.
And she gets more fan mail than Donovan does, I think.
So, and she's an ass kicker.
it's funny because it's the badder she gets, the more everyone likes her. So she's got an attitude. She does. And so she was going to be just a one book character. And she was in book three when I introduced her. And then I kind of sent her on her way. But she's too good. She kept coming back. And she's here to stay.
Well, you surprised us at the end of this book.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You surprised us at the end of this book. So.
Yes.
Good.
We'll see how that works out for Montero. I'm not going to say what the surprise is.
Montero's been through a lot.
Yes.
We introduced her in book three, and she lost the love of her life at that point and felt like she was to blame. And Donovan helped her through those times, and they did some other things together to save the world, actually. So she's I think she was in mourning long enough. She's kind of got an attitude. She's an acquired taste. I think it would be hard for her to date out in the real world. But I finally ginned up a character I thought that was her match.
You
and
did.
I liked that. I think it was time for her to kind of have that for herself again.
Well, I commend you because it was well done.
Do you see her as a troubled person?
As a
troubled.
Say it again.
Do you see her
troubled.
As a
yeah,
troubled person?
You know, she was. I mean, she in her backstory, she'd lost her mother. She was raised by a father, and there was some missing parts of her childhood that I think made her kind of a. She had some attitude problems, let's put it that way.
Well, she was ex-FBI, so, but I can guarantee you she didn't sit for 7.5 hours in front of a congressional committee. Nine hours.
She did not. So, you know, and it's that attitude that I think I needed it, because when she first found out some things about Donovan, instead of you know, making a fortune off what she knew, she blackmailed him.
Right.
And I thought that was kind of a defining moment for her. She found a tool and she needed it, and she blackmailed him into helping her. And so that sort of defined her and made her a larger character, I think, than I had intended.
Right.
And she did that. I was just standing there watching. So who knows? If I was ever going to spin somebody off, I think it would be Montero.
Right, right. Well, we learned a whole lot about Donovan Nash in this book. And I'm not giving it away because, of course, it's you got to read the book to find out. But
right,
holy crap!
It's fun to dip into his past a little bit, and the first two or three books were kind of all about that, and then.
Right.
And then I got away from it, and the books took on a different slant.
Right.
And so he hasn't really been faced with that for a while. And I thought it was probably time. That's a great storyline.
Terrific storyline.
How he's become. So I was happy to. You know, the more books you write, people ask me if it gets harder, and actually, I almost want to say at times, the material gets easier because you know these characters have grown and they do change, and so there is momentum and there's evolution going on within the small little cadre of characters that I had in this tight little niche of Eco Watch, and so you know, it's great fun. I have great fun writing these books.
Phil, is Donovan's backstory totally fleshed out in your mind, and you're just reeling out a little bit at a time for us, or do you think of new elements to that backstory to add as you go along? And you must have to keep track of what you've told us about him. So,
well, that's the tough part.
Because we will catch you.
Yeah, writing a series,
sometimes
that is
the research,
tough part.
Sometimes the research I have to do that's the hardest is my own stuff. I have to go back and just like, what did I say? Where did Donovan go to college? And so there are those elements that I do have to keep track of. But they're, you know, we know Donovan from, you know, there's 25 years, except for the death of his parents, which I do talk about.
Right.
We don't know much about his life for the first 25 years.
Right, right.
So that sits there. And then my son, bless his heart, he's 30, but he looked at me the other day and we were talking about the books and stuff. And he's like, Dad, he says, what do you think if I wrote a book like in the future, like when Abigail, which is Donovan and Lauren's daughter, when she's like 25, mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, bring me some ideas. You you have to clear everything past me, and I get a cut. But yeah, you know, she could be the coolest character of them all. If you could imagine Donovan and Lawrence.
Yeah.
Oh no, no, Janie is the coolest character of all.
Would you consider writing anything that's sort of the prequel? When it's the life of Robert Huntington, what was his name? before he becomes Donovan? Because I would think he sounds like a pretty interesting guy, you know, during those years.
Well, it's an interesting family. I mean, there's a lot of things I think about, you know, and there are prequels that are, you know, and floating around in my head that would I think would be entertaining. And so there's, you know, and that's a little of kind of why I took some time out to just sort of process what I'd created, because all I did for 6 years was just create. So it's been an interesting time to just kind of sit and reflect and kind of project where this series is going, right, and who all's going in what direction. There's nothing's been eliminated in terms of directions that the series could go. And I'm very thankful for that, because there are options.
Phil, you mentioned the fact that your book tours. I was kind of curious, is there one city that you like, or do you have a favorite city for your book tours?
You know, there is. My first book, Category 5, for the first two books came out, Category 5 and then Code Black, when I was living in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And that's a great book town. I was still flying then. And I had a friend before Category 5 was about to come out, and the publisher went bankrupt, just destroyed everything. So there I am left, and I've got these arcs, but the book's not coming out. I did get my rights back, but, you know, it was 8 steps backwards. And a friend of mine says, you know, I've got a friend that's a writer, and I'll have him give you a call. Maybe he's got some ideas. And I said, well, yeah, sure. You know, and he goes, I don't know if you've heard of him, but his name's Vince Flynn. I'm like, your friend is Vince Flynn, and you're going to have Vince call me? And Vince called the next day, and wow, he was just instrumental in helping me regroup and get the book going. And it did come out, and he blurbed it, and, you know, and then the next book came out shortly thereafter, and it was a finalist for the Minnesota Book Awards. And, you know, people like John Sanford were fans, and, you know, just everybody in that writer's community in Minneapolis, and the reader community, is they're all rooting for the people there, and I'll never be able to thank them for that. And I always go back to Minneapolis and go back to the little independent bookstores that were hand selling my books when I was an unknown novelist.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what John Sanford says about writer's block? We had him on the show. What his comment about writer's block was, if you get stuck, send in a guy with a gun.
I just blow something up.
Well, you start fire tornadoes. Well, we've got a couple minutes.
He also said he really doesn't get it. He's just too busy writing to do a book a year. You know, he doesn't get it. But we all thought it was brilliant.
Comment.
If you're stuck, here's what you can
bring
do.
In a guy with a gun. Actually, I'm thinking about writing a book about the Writer's Block show, because we've had so many wonderful people on and some great conversations. And of course, we go through co-hosts like, you know, my underwear.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I know. But I think of the name of calling the book, when you're stuck, bringing a guy with a gun. the musings from the Writer's Block. Anyway, we know what your thoughts are on Writer's Block. Well, why don't you give them to us again?
Well, my thoughts on Writer's Block are, if you plan far enough ahead, you're not going to have it. And I think that the fact that I kept your mug right on my desk, right in front of
broken.
Me, I had the word Writer's Block. That was just kind of me flipping off the universe and saying, it's not going to happen. So I think about you guys every day till I broke my cup, but my new one will be here on Monday. So
yes,
I appreciate it.
Yes, you have another one coming. So,
yeah. So Writer's Block is an integral part of my process.
Dishwasher.
And I thank you guys very much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Guard it with your life.
Yeah.
The next one's going to cost you $6.95.
$9.95.
Oh, you're going to charge them shipping?
Well, no, I'm going to charge them shipping, too. $9.95 and $4 shipping and handling. So there you go. You want more?
Every writer should have one.
I'm telling you. Well, every writer that comes on this show does get one. I mean, I ship them to Canada. I'm not proud.
We like the Canadians.
We like the Canadians. They just don't like our president. Anyway.
We won't go there.
No. But, you know, it's always fun having you on. And you know, you're always welcome to give us more info and say, hey, I got another book coming out. The bookie's sitting right here.
Well, always.
I mean,
you're always on my call list.
Well, right now you're the record. You have the record for being on the show.
I do.
You do.
I did not know
that. This is your third trip.
Well, that's I feel very privileged.
I probably should have sent you another mug anyway.
Yeah, you should have 3 mugs.
I know. Huh?
There we go.
Now I need to send you another one so you can have a pair.
There you go.
No,
there you go.
I'm not going to do that. Well, anyway, guess what we have? We have Henry calling in, so hang tough. Don't anybody go anywhere. And we're going to bring Henry in as we speak. Henry, are you there?
There you go. There you go.
Henry.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the furry spoonies at sea.
I like it.
Henry, say hello to Philip Donnelly.
Well, it's your roving report at Henry Park of Henry's Western Roundup in True West, and there's big news tonight.
Yes?
Item one, Emmy nominations.
Ah.
HBO's Westworld Season 2 scores 21 nominations, including Best Drama Series. Two lead actors, Ed Harris and Jeffrey Wright.
To him.
Lead actress, Evan Rachel Wood. Supporting actress, Thandie Newton. And the list goes on and on. And Netflix Godless has 5 nominations, including Outstanding Limited Series. Lead actress, Michelle Dockery. Supporting actor, Jeff Daniels. Supporting actress, Merritt Weaver. And the list goes on a little longer. Well, yeah, it's still very good. Next Tuesday, July 17th at 11 a.m., get to the Autry for Rob Ward's Word on Western, where Rob will be discussing epic Westerns with actors Michael Dante and H.M. Wynant and director William Wyler's son, David Wyler.
Are you running
Item
out
3.
Of oh, okay.
Or should I stop doing it this
no,
way?
No,
we love
no,
it.
No, we love it. Wait a minute. Here, let me give you
the California Supreme Court rejected 102-year-old Gone with the Wind star Olivia de Havilland's lawsuit against Ryan Murphy and FX Network over her portrayal in Betty and Joan. She's a tough cookie, you know. She's the one who drove Confidential magazine out of business. They claimed she was fornicating in a dark corner of the Chinese theater, and she proved she was out of the country when they said it happened.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And she drove him into bankruptcy.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Personally, I'd have loved to have seen her win in a way, but I really don't think she was portrayed in a negative light at all. What did you guys think of Betty and Joan?
We loved it.
I was okay. I mean, you forgot that it was the two characters, so it was a story. It was all right.
Yeah, it's funny because my one real criticism of it was actually not how she was portrayed, but I love Catherine Zeta-Jones, but she never reminded me of Olivia de Havilland for a moment.
No.
No,
No.
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 Not at all.
No. In the roundup, I'm going to be reviewing some wonderful video releases. I think last time I mentioned the 1936 documentary, The Spanish Earth. But my favorite, there's a Sunset Carson Western, Deadline, which is perfectly okay for a Sunset Carson Western. But a special feature, there's a fabulous half-hour film, Engine Talk, which, okay, is probably offensive now, but was not then, with Colonel... Well, you know, people get touchy.
Yeah,
but it was done by Colonel Tim McCoy and chiefs from several different tribes teaching the history of Indian Sign Language. And it's just remarkable.
Huh.
And if you haven't yet, please pick up the new True West with West Studio on the cover. Yes, I finally got that interview.
Yay!
All right, cool.
I'm sorry I mentioned it before I had it.
Yeah.
And I also have another article.
Teaser.
That's right, but I didn't expect it to be like a 3-month teaser. But we got there.
Hey,
anyhow, I also have an article about the only Western series Norman Lear ever created, The Deputy, which starred Henry Fonda.
Henry Fonda.
Norman Lear gave me a terrific interview for that piece.
Wow. I thought he was dead.
Oh. No, Norman, he's got Lear a new series coming up, and apropos of what you're saying, it's called Guess Who Died?
Hey, Henry, I got an assignment
it is,
for you.
It's, what's that?
I got an assignment for you. I want to hear more about this new web series called Forsaken Westerns. I've kind of been watching it, and they're finding old pilots and old episodes that are kind of gone and things like that, and it's been pretty fascinating. And I'm kind of curious to hear more about it if you have a kin to it.
Wait, I'm sorry. I had a little trouble hearing you. What is the title?
It's called Forsaken Westerns.
Oh, my God. I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been seeing that on Facebook.
Yeah.
On YouTube.
Yeah.
I will take that assignment. I've been meaning to track that guy down. He's got copies of so much stuff I have never heard of. Just, you know, one-shot Westerns.
Well, you know what?
Pilots that never aired.
It was interesting because they showed an episode of Boots and Saddles the other day I was watching. And he mentioned that there's an early sighting of Johnny Western, who did The Half Gun Will Travel.
Right.
And Johnny Western was the first guy I pretty much had a chance to interview in my radio career in Prescott, Arizona. And it was funny because I'm looking for him, and, you know, this is like, he's really, it's like 60 years ago. And he was the only guy there, he was distinguishable because he was the only soldier there with a guitar.
Ah!
Anyway, there's just some
fascinating stuff. The only soldier there with what?
A guitar.
Guitar, musical instrument.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, no, I will definitely track that down because I'm in meaning to, and that's the encouragement I need.
Good.
Hey, Henry, what's the 411 on Yellowstone?
I'm sorry?
What's the 411 on Yellowstone? Is it doing better? Or?
As far as the Nielsen's, I don't know. Actually, I recorded last night's, and I haven't seen it, but overall, I know the ratings have been very strong.
Huh.
There's a lot of criticism among, Western people who, you know, everyone has their own political, or not political, but specialized axe to grind about, what kind of saddle was that after all.
Yeah, I hear that at my house,
people get
too.
Very technical, but overall, I think it's the reaction's been very positive. What have you thought of it?
Well, like I told you before, the first two episodes, I didn't care for so much because of the woman that plays his daughter, but we've seen episode three and four, and I'm liking it much better. It's getting a little bit intense right now. So, is it going to be a continuing series, or is it just done after 10 episodes?
It was an original order of 10 episodes, and it hasn't been determined yet whether they're going to go for another season. But I will bet it will, because I know it is, granted Paramount Network hasn't been around very long, but it's the highest rated thing that they've done.
Uh-huh.
And it is the highest rated new series that's aired this summer.
Oh, okay.
On any network, and that's broadcast as well as cable.
All right. Okay.
Well, good.
Excellent.
Oh, one more thing. You know, Tab Hunter just passed away.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. Just a couple of days ago, and he starred in quite a few Westerns, good ones, including The Burning Hills.
Yep.
They Came to Cordura.
Yep.
Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean. And now he did a comedy Western in 86 called Lust in the Dust with Divine Lainey Kazan for director Paul Bartel. And I got to admit, I never got around to seeing it, but I was looking it up. And do you know who else is in the cast?
No.
Cesar Romero, Henry Silva, Woody Strode, Pedro Gonzalez. It's like a Howard Hawks film in drag.
Yeah, yeah, very much. So.
Well, he made one also
and
with
you
his
could
wife.
Read, I'm sorry?
He made one with when he was married to Suzanne Plachette, too. Western, he's a cavalry.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember the name of it, but...
I was thinking that was The Burning Hills, but probably
no,
not.
I don't think I'm so. Confused. Anyway.
But anyway, you can read all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Henry. We'll talk to you the first part of August.
That sounds great. Talk to you then.
Bye, Henry.
Happy trails, folks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Henry Park. Phil, are you still with us? Don't tell me I hung up on Phil. Oh, he may have hung himself up. Crap.
He had to go get something in that writer's block cup.
Wait a minute. Apparently. I did.
Oh, well.
Well, Phil, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Call back or don't. But anyway, thanks so much for joining us. And you can actually go to PhilDonnelly.com and you can get all his books.
It's good stuff. It really is.
Yeah, it is. It's good. It's great stories. Great stories. Golly, we're out of time. Where the hell did this night go?
Gone.
Jeez, we just did KWTF radio when we were in the other studio, and it flew by, too.
Is Bobby still on the line?
I'm here. Yeah, she's here.
Good.
I'm here. Well, next week, we have a writer named Tosca Lee.
And that book is amazing.
The Progeny. Oh, my God. Isn't it good?
Oh, my gosh.
I started reading it yesterday. I'm about a quarter of the way through it.
Yeah, I'm about 150 pages in, and it's another one of these, like, it starts with a bang.
Yeah, it does, and it just keeps going and going and going, and they just keep piling more on you, and it's really cool. So she's going to be an interesting conversation, because that's what all her books are like. She's all supernatural.
She's in Canada.
Yeah, she's Canadian.
Yeah, she's in Canada.
Well, actually, she's from Virginia.
Oh, she is? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So she speaks A with a southern accent?
Yeah. She does. A.
And drop dead gorgeous, I have to say.
Yeah, she is very pretty. Yeah.
She going to be in studio?
No.
Oh.
No, she's in Canada, eh?
Well, nobody says, she can't fly down to the show. No.
Oh, I don't think they want to get on a plane and fly down here just to be on our show.
Oh, well.
Although, they should now.
Yeah.
I would.
Well,
you're already here.
You drive in from Agora.
Yeah, well, it's tougher for me to drive in than it is from somebody to fly in.
Well, that's true, because Burbank Airport's right there.
That's right.
I mean, less than 5 miles from here. So, I mean, we sit there. The whole show, I watch airplanes take off.
Yeah. I live, 9 miles away, and it takes me...
Is it not only 9 miles?
It's not very far. It's like takes me an hour and a half. Really? Because of the time of the show, the time of the day I got to come. So.
Oh, yeah.
Believe it or not, it does. It takes.
We live 25 miles away, and it takes us 25 minutes.
Yeah, but you come an hour before I do.
So, Bobby, how far do you live away from the...
Bobby, you're 1,500 miles
away? I'm actually just, here on the phone in the studio. I don't have to drive anywhere. It's fabulous. I just come into the dining room and set up, and then good to go.
You're such a brat.
I did watch Yellowstone the 2 hour. I finally got around to that actually this afternoon, and I kind of agreed with you, Jerry.
Oh,
at least on the first episode, I'm hoping that I kind of warm up to them all.
Yeah.
There isn't much good to say about any of the characters in the first episode.
No, and the daughter.
So
just
it'll
like
be interesting to see how they develop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the daughter's like a real piece of work.
Yeah.
Anyway,
she has to have an interesting backstory. I'm guessing we get some of that.
Oh,
I'm
guessing we are going to.
Yeah.
Like she's messing around with her brother or something.
No, she's not.
Anyway.
She-
Okay, well, that's going to be it for us tonight. It has been a great show, except for Phil. I'm sorry, Phil, if we hung up on you. It certainly was not our intent. Although, remember this, if you get stuck... Bring in a guy with a gun.
There you go.
Okay.
Just blow it up.
Or, Phil, you blow it up. Anyway.
Or bring in an earthquake or something.
For Bob Brill and Jerry and myself and Bobby Gene Bell out there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, we thank you for listening. It's another one shot in the rear end, and we am out of here.